I've got a new microphone, and this is the first thing I've recorded on it. You're welcome. Right, okay, we're already on, so we're like, we don't need a problem or anything. In fact, this vague burbling that I'm doing now for a metasode serves perfectly well as an introduction. Hello, everybody at home. We are the 80s kids, and one of us hasn't been to bed yet. The other one wants to go and eat his lunch, so let's get on with it, shall we?
You were eating a sandwich earlier. You were having a midnight snack.
I was preparing for recording by having a little snack. I had what you would describe as a death sandwich. It wasn't peanut butter, it was cashew nut butter. But to you, that distinction is entirely academic. But to you, it would be a vomiting, choking, and passing out sandwich.
Would you like a strychnine sandwich? Oh, no, thank you. I'm trying to cut down on my gluten you get from bread.
It reminds me of the time that we went to the Doctor Who experience and I attempted to take you to Five Guys. It turned out, which I had not taken note of before, that Five Guys fry all of their chips in peanut oil. But thankfully, there was another equally good burger joint nearby, so we went there instead.
Now, in alternative universe, like I was Aristotle, and instead of being given hemlock to drink, they gave me a bunch of Five Guys fries instead, like cyanide coated French fries. It's probably how I'm gonna go, you know.
Yeah, it is. We actually ended up in there the other day because we were going through Cheltenham and they have a Five Guys and we wanted to eat, and the Nando's was over full, so we went to Five Guys instead. And it just boggles my mind that they do that, because although your nut allergy is slightly different to those people who just get anaphylaxis, that's bad enough. Like, why you just cut out everyone who's got a nut allergy? Just piss off. You can't eat any of our chips. It's like, seems a bit of a weird business decision.
I can't go to Chick-fil-A if I ever go to America for exactly the same reason.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so yeah, so that's the, anyway, so yes, I did have a little snack, and you're going to have a little snack in a short while. But we have to review the season.
Talking about food!
Yes. Let's talk about Choose Your Own Adventure books. We promised people we'd come back to that. But yeah, I mean, this was one of the things. I watched a YouTube video about Choose Your Own Adventure, the history of the actual, not fighting fantasy, not those ones where you had to get dice to read a book. We're talking about the Choose Your Own Adventure books where you just went through different routes and they were very, you know, and they used to advertise the amount of endings on the top of the book as if that was some kind of selling point, which I actually... In retrospect, it's like, well, okay. Like, I don't
constitutes an ending. I mean, I don't classify you died. I mean, technically it's an ending. It's not really an ending. And normally I found these books also had the, well, you managed to wangle your way out of the whole scenario with your overcautiousness and let's just get out of here-ness. So yeah, fair enough. You just set out the whole event and wonder what it was all about. That ending is... like actual true possible endings, that's a rare thing, surely.
Some of the Choose Your Own Adventures did have various, you know, satisfactory endings, but you then obviously had to go through again to get a different satisfactory ending. But the one I remember most was that there was a guy, and it's really interesting that this is the only thing that he did, but there's a guy called J.H. Brennan who did a series called Grail Quest, which is far more like fighting fantasy because you again had to do fights occasionally against various monsters, so you needed dice on hand if you weren't going to just cheat and assume you won everything, which is what I did, because who can seriously be bothered to sit there rolling dice next to the book?
Those are the worst, because it's like, it's not that you made bad choices, you just had a bad dice roll and now you're dead.
Yeah, some monsters kill you. But the thing with J.H. Brennan, he innovated in the field in two ways. One, when you died in J.H. Brennan books, you always went to location 14. So location 14 was the you died location. And there would be some humorous wall of text there about you being dead. But then because he realized you were going to go back in a loop, he gave you several random options of places to go back into the adventure from, which were all just locations that you could visit during the adventure. And so you would essentially respawn at a random point. And that was pretty decent. I thought that was a good innovation. So the two innovations were, one, you always knew where you were going to go. You didn't just, you died, the end, go back to one. You'd go to 14. And then you could, from that point, respawn, essentially, at some point in the adventure. So
That I quite like, because, you know, as a child doing these books, you obviously use your chubby fingers as bookmarks and start exploring your options to find the obvious death trap.
Well, exactly, and it completely...
Yes, this one gives you the bravery just to go explore and see what you can find out, because sometimes you might learn something even in your fatalities. They did try to get around this, and I hated it. That there was they give you, like, well, you had one of this yourself in your story, the sort of genetic failure, so to speak, that you did something very early on that doomed you. But we're going to let you rattle on for several entries until you hit the thing where you made the wrong choice way, way, way back earlier. So you thought you were being clever with your fat fingers in as bookmarks, but no, we've got round it. And there's one book I did where I did the whole adventure and I finally got to the end, but at some point in the past I did some exploring and I got bitten by a rat. And apparently the rat option was to not go exploring and not get bitten by a rat, because at the end it goes, if you got bitten by a rat, you die of the plague. Actually, as you were going into the city to get your celebratory, you won paragraph.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about this is it was all seen as a bit silly and lighthearted. And I think that actually the children who read these books took them more seriously than, in fact, the authors. They thought it was all just a bit of a laugh, which is why it was quite so brutal. I mean, writing one has been a completely different experience, obviously, to reading one. And the things, like you say, the genetic failure, the one where you do something early on and it has a consequence later. I mean, that actually was quite late. You just get bored of trying to go. Like, the thing with, like, I did in the adventure in that episode with the chainsaw, where you just get the chainsaw, then walk into the shed and kill the zombies. It's like, it feels a bit like... you know, pick up chainsaw, kill zombies. Do you know what I mean? It's like
I just had the philosophy of thoroughly explore the area before proceeding.
Well, yes, exactly.
You might miss something.
The text in that area was somewhat misleading as well, because it said, "What's the magic word underneath the chainsaw?" And when I play tested it with my wife, she thought, "Well, I'm not allowed to touch it unless I know what the magic word is." I'm like, no, because you'd learnt the convention by that time of the readied out choice. You knew that. There wasn't like a separate thing that you had to do to get the chainsaw, so that was okay. But she didn't know that at the time, so yeah. There, you know, my choose your own adventure design style. I think the other thing is this idea that it's going to be this random mashup of films. It seems to make you think that it's not serious, but what you end up writing is something that's hideously difficult. If you're actually trying to write an actual narrative, maybe you'd be a bit gentler. But there we go. So that's what we did.
I think writing-wise, that's always the hardest thing that struck me, because it's very nice to sit back and think of a lovely structure to your story. That's very exciting. But when you actually go into the process of it, you're basically describing a series of rooms.
Yes.
And it's finding a new way. This is why the humour creeps in. Because you walk into a room and there is table with key on it, are two exits. It's like, how do you sex that up?
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, I mean, humour is fine, but what I mean is this idea of this brutal environment where the wrong choice will just, you know, have your head snapped off, or, you know, whatever it is, or have you made a POW in a doll's house, or whatever these things are. It's just like, it's and part of that comes from having too many time restrictions and having overstretched yourself in the design in the first place. So there we go. So that was that episode. A little under the board on that one special episode that we recorded to make up for the fact that we foolishly lost one of the episodes by not downloading it in time. So that segues us nicely into a discussion of, the season as a whole. I found it, because we lost two episodes, somewhat arduous to get through the recording this time.
It's only supposed to be six episodes, but we recorded eight, and one of those ones we lost was a huge one, because we had a new format thing which we liked, but the new format kind of ballooned a bit. We didn't appreciate how big the new format was.
And so
it's like, well, but this works, but we just need to like focus in on it and maybe just do two films and or something. It's fine. It's like I say, half the time it's just gear changes in my head, because previously when we were doing this like every single goddamn week, it was of course constantly a thing that was cycling through your head all the time and you were constantly working on it. It's the whole start stop, because obviously you just don't sit around twiddling your thumbs. You get on with other things that are interesting you, and you're getting quite into those, and suddenly I've got to go through the gear change. I've got to knuckle down, I've got to do some editing, and I've got to do the other thing that I was doing, and it's just sort of give the self-discipline of like, because this is why I don't watch the film, because it's like, it's not really in my headspace. Do it. It's like the main thing I want to do is like not forget the recording date. I have a paranoia about that. I have a paranoia about forget the recording date, and you were sitting there for 2 hours twiddling your thumbs, sending me messages on Facebook going, where the hell are you, you bastard?
Nah. I'm now doing, for the time being, I'm doing two podcasts, which is Roundtable and this, which is now we've finished this. So it'll just be Roundtable till I finish recording that. And then I get to sit down and have a little think while I, in fact, mill out these episodes into the wild for people to consume and enjoy. And if what I found is with the both sides, if people can't make it, you just go or forget or whatever. You go, we won't record this week then, it's fine, I don't mind. And then you disappear off into the ether. So, I mean, you know, that's really not an issue, to be fair. Also, what is really weird is that we've switched around because the clocks have changed. Now, in the past, the fact you do in the morning and me doing the evening didn't happen very often, or in fact hardly happened at all. And also we preferred recording therefore in the summer when my mid-morning was your mid-evening and it all seemed to sync up nicely. But now the fact that that's my mid-morning just means that I've got a small child running about making a bunch of noise. So this winter recording where I can start about 11, 11.30 and you still get a lie-in seems to be the way of the future. So we'll have to bear that in mind.
The pitch invasions, yeah, and I get a snooze. It was great.
Yeah, so it was great. It was great. Yeah. So there we go. I mean, I'm going to say, I think that maybe one of the things that's come up for me this season is the fact that as you were having a difficulty with the whole watching things, and I've tried to be kind. I was like, I didn't make it like these. Like, I know in previous seasons, I've gone, oh, you could watch this, or you could watch that, or you could. Because I like a big list of films that I'd like to watch, do you know what I mean? And I realised that this was maybe pressing on you a little bit too much. But you said in one of the episodes, probably both of them, the Netflix one, or the Netflix is screwed one, or the one about what we did during the lockdown, that you'd kind of fallen out of the habit of watching movies and television for that matter.
I haven't seen Squid Game yet. Everyone else is talking about it. It's just the fact that there isn't really anyone obviously there's you and the podcast, but
yes,
apart from that, there is nobody else I talk to about TV or films. It's like, even like the whole family used to watch Doctor Who. Now it's shrunk down to just me. And obviously I'm grumpy about it. So it's like, I feel like I can't just accost a stranger and talk about how grumpy I feel about things. You know,
yeah,
so.
By the way, I've got a question here which probably will have been answered by the time we actually put this online, but hasn't been answered for me satisfactorily yet. Doctor Who Flux, what does that mean? Have they just begun the season, or
all season is one giant story. Although I said, well, I know as much as you. I presume you've seen, because we've only seen one episode so far.
Yeah.
So obviously there's some meta problem going on, which is the Flux, and it has consequential problems. I mean, the first episode was just nuts because they were just pulling in elements and characters from future episodes we haven't done yet and throwing them at us. Like this is all intrigue and foreshadowing and it'll all make sense later. I mean, I think he's done this before. He'll distract people from the fact that the episode's not, you know, his overall quality, when he's really, really good, it gets like three out of five stars. It's kind of distracting people from about the episode too much, but it's constantly throwing new things at them all the time. So, yeah, the whole the Flux is destroying the universe thing is obviously the meta problem. The Skull guy is obviously the meta villain. But we're going to have villains of the week as we deal with all the things we set up in episode one, or rather, we flash something in front of you. Here's a character from episode three. Here's a character you'll have to know in episode four.
Yeah, but just to come back to this. So what I saw last week was just episode one of the season.
Yes.
Well, right.
It's only six episodes this year.
Oh, is it only the six? Okay, I didn't know that either.
They used to make like 10 a year, but now because of COVID and other things, they're only making six. They've recorded them all. They've recorded six, and they've done three others. And the three others are being held back for specials next year. So they're dragging out the 13th Doctor as long as possible. Because they've pretty much been taking a year off between every season as it's been going on anyway. So it's not until 2023 are we actually going to get Russell T. Davies' return to Doctor Who. So I'm just like, I'm interested. But it's a sodding long way away. I, even though I'm sure they've recorded Jodie's regeneration, I'm positive they haven't cast anyone to replace it yet. What's the rush?
Yeah. Well, okay, fair enough. Though I just so essentially because they've done a sort of weird sort of quasi David Tennant thing where there's specials and then a six episode season or whatever it is, they've decided to play silly buggers. I mean, I think it's not going to help the show that they've in such a way confused you as to what you're even watching. I mean, because they've called it Doctor Who Flux. It's like, what is that?
What's it about? Yeah, it's not very. I mean, Flux. It just sounds like some sort of gastric problem, doesn't it? I think also, you know, interest has just gradually been declining. The alarming thing about the ratings, because Capaldi got quite low. You know, he was no longer young, sexy Doctor, and Stephen Moffat can be a bit too weird for himself sometimes as well. But he did have Dead Cat Bounce. So you knew what his floor was, and then he would go up a bit every so often when the episodes became interesting again. Jodie, we just have this constant steep decline where we find a new low. So she hasn't even, we haven't found, she's excavating new depths. We still don't know what the floor of the 13th Doctor is in terms of view retention. So this is quite alarming.
But the thing about it is, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like, not helping matters by going, is this a season? I don't know. Like, I didn't know. I'm sure a lot of people who watch television more casually, like, there was some Doctor Who on. I don't know what that was about. Is it on next week? We don't know. Do you know what I mean? So they can always say, well, COVID plus the fact that we didn't tell anyone what we were doing. These things are probably not going to help viewing figures overall. And the fact is that with Russell T. Davies coming back and there's a whole new ownership thing, they don't really care either. So there we go. So that's Doctor Who. And that's like, So anyway, I mean, to return to the point about you not really watching films anymore, it does beg the question, which I'm going to propose to you now quite seriously. Is it worth doing a film and television podcast?
Do we need a third person on the show?
There is that, but we've discovered that is, I mean, we didn't realise what the magic sprinkle of having Justin on the show was. I've also listened to a very popular podcast at the minute, which is about some people that I know vaguely are doing about just looking at years, not the film and television of a year, didn't rip us off completely, but they are just looking at, they're currently doing the 90s. They decided that was the decade they were going to start with. And honestly, listening to it, it's like all the things that I'm immensely proud of about Revenge of the 80s Kids, such as when we do a show, we prepare the show, you know, and when we post-produce the show, it comes out shiny and nice. We've become very good at this. But those things, what I've found is, they don't matter. Like, our show is not that popular, but their show, in which they just basically spend the entire hour bickering and not really talking about the subject and regularly make horrible mistakes, is much more popular than us. And it sort of gave me this thing of like, it's not worth being quality, is it, really? Like, other people.
I did kind of talk, because obviously I talked about format, and to some extent that's kind of what I want to cling on to, is that we have a formula, and so we can just grab various elements and we put it into the machine, and that trundles us whittering on. I think it's also the fact we have just talked and talked and talked and talked to each other for like how many hundreds of hours now? So we both know each other quite well, and it's not often we have, you know, I'm not the sort of person who particularly enjoys vigorous debates necessarily. I just like posing out a question and we chew on it for a while and regurgitate it and digest it and dismiss it, or maybe we don't and strongly disagree. I usually don't really challenge you on it particularly, because it's not like I'm steadfast in my view on how things should be. So it's a bit strange. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure is the answer. I kind of feel that podcasting still might be a thing. I'm just trying to think what to do, or whether it should be more creative in a different direction.
One of the reasons why I replaced the 2013 show with a sort of choose your own adventure type of format is that you said that you're enjoying the game format, and I did feel that in that show, even as a replacement, the energy was a bit higher. That if we took off in a different direction, like entirely, and said, look, you know, like the film and television stuff, it's all there, and it's all great. But the fact is that you can't really, or at least you can have a film and television podcast in which one person watches a lot of film and television and the other one doesn't. But the other one has to be Simon Mayo, and you know, have that kind of thing of like, yeah, I can only watch movies occasionally because I've got like 700 radio shows to do and that kind of thing. I do feel that, you know, maybe I mean the other thing is that if we were to finally stick a fork in Revenge of the 80s Kids, it would but then move on to just do a different podcast about something else entirely, then we could we could continue to use the Revenge of the 80s Kids name and anchor, but quit doing the blog, because the archive bit, having to post it to two places is quite arduous, whereas Anchor's very easy to use. Had we had Anchor at the beginning, which we didn't, like it just didn't exist in 2013, we probably could have started there. But as if you remember back in the day, we had to use, what was it, Podomatic, which didn't, you know, limited space, we had to delete them all the time and all of this kind of stuff. Whereas Anchor, which is owned by Spotify, by the way, it just lets you load as many as you want and you keep going, because they instantly send all of your Anchor podcasts into Spotify for the Spotify to be able to play them as well and stuff like that. So, and it obviously distributes it to other platforms as well. So Spotify don't care. They're going to let you just keep pumping content, free content that they can put on Spotify into their podcast channel. So that's a great solution. I just thought that was something that we should chew on, due to the fact that, you know, it does strike me as like, I'm perfectly happy, I'll keep watching film and television for the rest of time, and I have got people about whom I discuss it who are actually watching it as well, so we could discuss the show or film indeed. Continuing to do a dedicated film and television podcast in which half of the presenters don't actually know, you know, anything about what we're talking about, I just thought, well, maybe we should rethink that.
Well, you know, you don't necessarily have to feel wedded to me. I mean, I'm not going to sue you if you do an episode without me, a special discussion episode. You know, I mean, I'm in Australia, which really locks down your available recording times.
Well, like, this is another thing that I thought, you see, it seems to me that dealing as I have Geeks of the Round Table, which is essentially sort of a film and television podcast, which doesn't actually come under the 80s kids brand. And in fact, my co-host, regular co-host on there, was born in the 90s, 93 to be precise, so is not an 80s kid in any way. But, I mean, the Revenge of the 80s Kids brand could be seen as that's about film and television, isn't it? So having two podcasts that are that's about film and television might seem to be an extravagance. So, yeah, the other option is, of course, that Revenge of the 80s Kids continues, but Ian no longer sits. He regenerates and becomes someone else. Whereas me and Ian...
I'll be back for the anniversary story, though, mate.
Yeah, me and Ian step sideways into a completely different type of podcast altogether that's possibly more about gaming in the sense of role-playing and stuff like that, because that seems to be more where your head's at the moment.
Yeah, I'm playing a lot of Final Fantasy 14 at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about video gaming per se, but just like the thing we just did, Choose Your Own Adventure, talk about role-playing, talk about these things, talk about ideas that have come up, something a little bit more creative, and just sort of try and come up with that so that you've got more to give. I think it's probably the more that you feel you could contribute, because it's not like the old days where we'd mention, you know, the Wrath of Khan and you'd have like 15 minutes of organized thoughts which you'd noted down to just spill out about that particular property, which, you know, you've kind of done now.
Yes, we've excavated all the Star Trek films I could possibly talk about.
And the Star Wars, of course. I mean, while we're here,
the thing also is just kind of like the malaise, because it's like, at the end of the day, you know, it's fun to have a good rant, but the rant is always, you know, it's the little chocolate nugget in the cookie. It's the occasional treat where you get to let rip. By and large, we have a glow of appreciation. Currently, I'm Mr. Grumblebum. So, yeah. You don't want to go to a podcast where you go on and you grumble about everything. I don't know how those YouTubers do it. Virtually multiple times a week, they can complain about films with basically the same complaints. I mean, yeah. I appreciate there's an audience for that, but my goodness, I could not sustain it. I'd feel I've just said my piece, and what is there more to add if that's how I felt?
Yeah, well, indeed so. Just as I was going to take a small detour then into the Star Wars thing, are you coming back to D+ for the Book of Boba Fett?
Of course I will.
Oh, wow. Wow. And when are you going to, like, you know, click resubscribe? Literally on, like, the 27th. So you're literally going to come back to watch. So basically, Boba Fett's going to be there, and then you're going to have this massive... To be fair, I've just finished watching Star Wars Visions. You totally want to check that out. It's really good. It's like, and it suffers from the fact that it was brought out like halfway through the Marvel's What If run, and that got all the glory. But I tell you what, of the two, Star Wars Visions is the superior animation project.
Okay, I'll give it a
gander. So, yeah, I mean, it's like nine and an anthology series of nine anime-based Star Wars projects, and it's just like some of them. A couple of them are a little bit stupid. I mean stupid in a way where I suppose if you really like that Dragon Ball Z stuff, then having Sith Lords fighting one another in a sort of Dragon Ball Z fashion is fine with their squeaky voices and funny haircuts. But I didn't really like those episodes. But the episodes where they just do sort of mine out the way that Star Wars works a lot better if it's samurai fiction are pretty good consistently. Although they did blow their load a bit in the first episode, which is on a different level. Yes. I mean, so good. So yeah,
I'll give it a squeeze. I can't promise I'm going to be subscribed this week, but I do look for viewing pleasures to have when I'm eating my hamburgers.
So, yeah, so I mean, just thought I'd mention that. So, yes, you've got all that stuff to catch up with. I mean, when you resubscribe, God, you've got a cornucopia of, you know, four. By the time you get back, there'll be four Marvel shows and the animated one. So that's four live action shows, and Black Widow, and Shang-Chi. By the time you Boba Fett ends, you probably have the Eternals on there as well. Plus Jungle Cruise. Jesus Christ, you're just going to be... And then all the Star content, obviously the other content that they've
It's not the fact that Disney Plus doesn't present things that are watchable. That wasn't necessarily the issue. It was just... If something's making you angry for whatever reason, it's not up to the world to change. It's up to you to stop engaging with a thing that's making you upset. And so my sort of stepping back was like, well, if it's just making you upset all the time, step away from it, Ian. For goodness sake, be a freaking grown up.
That's all the time.
Well, it's like if you're angry about something, just disengage from it.
Was Disney Plus making you angry about stuff?
I quit in a fit of rage.
Why? What did it do? I can't think of... I mean, you quit after Mando Season 2, right?
Yes, but not immediately after Mando Season 2. I was happy to just let lapse for a while, but then Disney was being a bit Disney. So I did an FU and wrote a comment when I unsubscribed.
I don't even remember. Until they did WandaVision... After the end of Mando Season 2.
I think I was gone before WandaVision.
Oh yeah, you were gone before then, but in that gap in between Mando Season 2 ending and WandaVision beginning, I don't even remember. The only thing they put out that I recall was Soul, which is really good, and you haven't seen it yet, so that's another thing that's on Disney Plus that you should watch. But I can't remember.
It wasn't anything they put on, it was to do with the Disney Corporation.
Oh right, did they do something? Okay, I don't
know. They did something, and...
You're gonna get mad every time Disney do Disney shit. Then yeah, you are gonna be.
It was kind of like, well, I'm not gonna give you money if that's how you're gonna behave.
Right. Okay.
So it was grumpiness. And my sister basically she got it because my sister used to watch Disney Plus as well. I was like, I told her I was gonna subscribe and it lapsed. And she got her friend's account and she now watches through that instead. But I kept Netflix because they watch Netflix all the time. But I just dip in and out of Netflix occasionally. It's not like I have an habitual Netflix watcher.
Netflix, weirdly, has just done a show called Inside Job, which is an animated series about the company that runs all the secret cabals that run the world. And it's so good. It's like we did the Netflix is Screwed episode and about 3 weeks later, it's like Inside Job comes out and I've watched all 10 parts of the first one like over the last couple of weeks. So good. It's hilarious. So, yeah. So Netflix goes down like, they're screwed. We hate them. They're not doing anything special. And then they just come out with that gem and you're like, well, I'll enjoy the other two seasons of that before they cancel it for no reason. So, yeah, but... That's just the thing.
I'm sure if I was like, because I've been stuck in an airplane, and I've been stuck in an airplane with nothing else to do, I tend to watch a lot of movies to pass the time. I mean, it's just a case of there are other things out there to do other than watch television or stream television.
I have a 5-year-old, so there's a lot of. And to be fair, there's a lot of golden content. I mean, that golden age of television is not going anywhere. They keep pulling out, like there's loads of stuff where it's like, I'd probably quite like to watch that. It's not on my schedule though, so I haven't watched it. It's just like, can you stop now with the producing television that is like, that's of a sufficient quality where I'd watch that, because I can't keep up, literally can't keep up with all the good television. Movies obviously still very sluggish due to diseases.
Yes. I had a day off and I wanted to go see movies, but none of the ones I wanted were on. I think because obviously they're missing out their movies. I haven't seen Dune yet. I haven't seen James Bond yet. I think James Bond may have just come out over here.
James Bond I haven't seen because I tried to get interested and then I wasn't. But I have been to see Dune.
Yes. My dad doesn't really have any buddies to go. He's got to the 8th time in life now where his buddies are either infirm or underground, so he no longer has because he's my stepmom. Yeah, is really going to be interested in like musicals or comedies, or light family action movies. She's not interested in anything with any real danger or tension going on. So I'm his watching buddy for war films, for westerns, and for science fiction. So I'm going to buddy up with him and see Dune. I'll take him out to see Bond. I'm not particularly interested in this edition of Bond. But we'll go see a Bond film with him to, you know, take my dad out for the day. Dune, I definitely want to go see him.
Yeah, Dune is... my non-spoilerific review is that it's a much better version of Dune than the Lynch version, but I still appreciate the fact that the Lynch version is utterly insane in a way that this version really isn't.
I think my brother has seen it. I mean, he can't really spoil it for me because I know the story, but he said he did go back and see it twice. So that is kind of good praise when you can bear to sit through a movie twice. And
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, but yeah, so there we go. So I think the overall thrust of this episode, which is now coming to a close so that some of us can sleep and some of us can eat, is that I think that it is extremely possible that the Revenge of the 80s Kids is going to metamorphose. If the Revenge of the 80s Kids is going to continue to produce content regards like film and television, then I guess we have to change with the times and go, well, the people who want to talk about films and television, they should come on Revenge of the 80s Kids. And I think it's definitely worth us considering maybe doing a podcast about something else. So there we go. That is...
I was happy to talk to you. I think it's a bit of a shame we just can't sit down because I go around your house. Movies inevitably appear in your television. And then we can have a discussion about them. And it is from these exchanges... The podcast is kind of based. So it's just a shame I haven't been able to get to your house for a number of years. I'm going to try and get to your house next year at some point. Seeing what the sort of... I'll do whatever it is I have to do. If I had to get tested and quarantine myself for 2 days before I go, I'm happy to get boosters, jabs, disinfectants, put me in a honeycomb for the duration of the journey. Just so long as I'm not quarantined for 2 weeks either end. Do whatever it is I have to do to get to UK and back. And when I go to the UK next time, I'm taking extended leave from work, and I'll be in the UK for 6 weeks.
Oh, nice work. So yeah, so that's good. I think that from the point of view of us producing podcasts, I like our producing podcasts. We do good work. So I think that doing something around, I mean, the other thing that's happened, which is kind of serendipitous, is you asked about this format thing. And now that I know how to put together format features for a podcast, doing a format in which we talk about sort of role-playing and gaming tropes in a sort of format-y way is something we could probably very much do. So yes. Watch this space, I guess.
Also, don't be afraid of just being stupid. No podcast ever became unpopular because it was stupid.
Well, I think that's pretty much the way that we're going to end up going. So, watch this space. This is a metasode. I can never tell whether we want to do this. If people want to talk to us about films and television, then, Ian, where might they go to talk to us about those things, bearing in mind the fact that they'll only probably get a response from me, because you probably won't have seen it, unless it's due by the time they write it.
Yes, well, one place they could go to ask us what the hell is this podcast even about these days would be our Facebook page. You can find on Facebook / groups / 80s Kids, and that's 80s in letters. Please go there and join our groups page. We put up links there as well as links to our podcast. But podcasts are what it's all about. And for the moment, I suppose you could always go to the80skids.blogspot.com, where you found a full archive of every episode about our Revenge of the 80 Kids. And if you watch them all, I suppose you can discern some kind of trend. You can listen to them from the Internet Archive or download them to your PC for dark reasons of your own. But of course, in the ever-expanding franchise that is Leo and perhaps sometimes Ian talking about things via audio format, you have a number of options available, all of which can be found where, Leo?
Yeah, well, I think that our new show would probably find its home quite nicely on Geek Towers, which is a radio station that I run for a very small amount of money, in which we basically play, at the moment, old episodes of Revenge of the 80s Kids, but shortly new episodes of Revenge of the 80s Kids, episodes of a show that's on Geek Towers called Geeks of the Round Table, which is going to change format soon, and, you know, that sort of stuff. You can you can get the radio player on our The 80s Kids .blogspot page and archive, and you can also nip along to our group, which is facebook.com/groups/geek-towers, where we will try and endeavor to keep people up to date with what is going on in the world of Geek Towers as that project continues to exist. I have been informed that other people want to get involved. When they do, you'll find out about it there. So there we go. That is it. I mean, I do not think, people, that this is the end of Revenge of the 80s Kids, but it is probably, for the time being, the end of Ian's tenure on Revenge of the 80s Kids. We did a show when we did the end of the first season, which ran for over 100 episodes, in which we talked about jumping the shark. And of course, one of the categories for that is that you lose a major cast member. So we've already jumped the shark in several different ways on this show. And now we're going to go for the next one, which is we're going to jump the shark by losing a major cast member from the original cast. How do you feel about that, Ian?
I think a value was lost. No, it's nothing. Fine. I can still edit the bloody thing. It's fine. I mean, you know.
Well, that's a very kind offer. I should probably take you up on that. Of course, I'm going back to a weekly format now that you're gone. So we'll just send you one every week. No, I'm joking. There's going to be a hiatus here. And it's probably not going to be a long hiatus because I am producing other audio elsewhere. And also this winter recording is good. Okay. But yeah, we're going to go and have a little think about what we're going to do. And that's going to be it. But for now, I think that is all the 80s Kids. The end of season 5. Of course, obviously, we're about 8 shows on the Revenge of the 80s Kids away from the 150th episode. So you'll probably part in that.
I'll be putting together a clip collection again. Yeah. Now we've got another 50 to choose from.
But yeah, so there we go. And that is it. So I'm going to go and get some shut-eye now, and you're going to go and eat some lunch, aren't you?
Yum, yum. My stomach's grumbling.
Brilliant. All right, then. Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.